Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf, using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I am talking art with Sabrina Tabby, violinist of Atlas, a classically trained crossover string quartet who will be performing at Moline's Sound Conservatory on Sunday, November 10th at 7 p.m. Sabrina, welcome to Talking Art.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here. And you are no stranger to Quad City's audiences because you have been a member of the Quad City Symphony Orchestra since 2018.
Yeah, I mean officially 2019 in February.
Sure.
But I did audition in 2018 and I played one of the cycles then. So, yes. And then I lived in the Quad Cities for 4 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you have since gone off and spread your wings and are in Nashville now and playing with Atlas. You want to tell us a little bit about Atlas?
Sure. So Atlas is a unconventional kind of genre-defying string quartet. We began this journey together in 2016. And we knew that we wanted to play music that bridged more of a gap of audiences that we see today. There's lots of people out there who claim to not enjoy classical music.
Sure.
And who aren't, you know, don't necessarily resonate with some of the older canon, which it's still kind of hard to wrap my head around how, but regardless, that's the case today. And so we knew that we wanted to do something that was going to bridge that gap and make music more universal, not to, you know, deter people from the older tradition, but to kind of bridge the gap there. And so our name Atlas actually is to invoke a sense of worldliness and you know the beautiful diversity that we have in our world. We play music from all styles and genres and from different cultures and beyond. So that's what we're all about. And it's been an amazing journey so far.
Well, yeah, and listen, I was listening to a bunch of Atlas music yesterday, and it made me think of Bridgerton.
Like, yeah,
you have, you know, especially some of your
praise.
Yeah, your popular pop songs that you guys have covered. Yeah, just made me think of Bridgerton in the way.
Well, actually, I mean, it's funny. Bridgerton, you know, is a newer sensation that really put string covers on the map for the general population.
Sure.
And it's interesting how that's affected us. We were doing string covers before Bridgerton.
Right.
But it definitely has sparked more interest in it. And we've actually submitted tracks to Bridgerton to be used on the season. And apparently they used one of our songs to choreograph one of the ballroom scenes.
Oh,
and
cool.
That doesn't necessarily mean it gets onto the show in the end. There's so many factors
sure.
into what music they end up using. They could choreograph to something completely different and then use a different song in the final, you know, post-production.
Yeah.
But we are continuing to pitch to Bridgerton because we do feel like it's such a good fit. And it's been an interesting kind of cultural, like, just observation commentary to see how people really react to the string covers, because string music is known for being emotionally like rich and sure. to really pull out feelings from the song that words don't necessarily express on their own. These are all songs with words. But then you can really just go deeper with an instrumental cover, especially by strings, by a string quartet, one of the purest instrumentations out there.
You talked a little bit earlier about what Atlas means. How did Atlas start? I see that you have a twin sister, and she is also in Atlas.
It's true. So Atlas started, we were all living in Chicago at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was finishing up a master's degree at Northwestern, and the other members were also finishing up grad school, lots of music schools in Chicago, and there's a pre-professional training orchestra called the Civic Orchestra of Chicago.
Yeah.
And so we were all members of that as well, and that's where our paths all officially crossed. Of course, I have known my twin sister my whole life, and we
Who's older?
She is. I am the youngest.
Youngest. Your whole life.
And yes, there were 4 minutes of her life she didn't know me yet.
A sad 4 minutes.
And so we've played music together. We've actually, you know, we played duets like immediately once we started our instruments, and we were in a string quartet, a competitive string quartet throughout middle school, high school. We competed at the Fish Off competition and performed at Carnegie Hall with From the Top. So we got to do a lot of fun chamber music activity before college.
Sure.
But then, so meeting the other members, you know, we all, our paths all crossed in the Civic Orchestra. And at the time, Yo-Yo Ma was the artist in residence for the program. And so he would visit several times a year. He would do workshops directly with us, and we would even perform side by side with him. And one of his big things is just that music is universal, and music must bring people together.
Sure.
And a lot of classical music doesn't do that, unfortunately. I mean, it's just the way things have gotten. Our society has maybe shorter attention span, needs more, you know, I don't know, visual stimulation, or whatever it may be. The classical music form is losing the attention, and also doesn't help that, you know, concerts are in these like stodgy concert halls, and maybe tickets are out of the price range of some. And so, you know, we were inspired by Yo-Yo Ma to come together and to do something different, not just follow the same norm that string quartets all follow.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to forge our own path. And I mean, that is really what we had to do. We had a few role models to look up to, like, you know, Kronos Quartet, or there's a wonderful group called Time for Three.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that is so incredibly proficient in their craft.
Yeah.
They all, you know, they're like the best players you could find. But they are playing music that's just more relatable.
Yeah.
Really, really. And also then on top of that, they have a lot of familiar tunes, you know, Orange Blossom Special or Amazing Grace. But what they do with the arrangement is really elevating, really. Mm-hmm. And so that was our main, you know, kind of goal, was to play music that people, it's already beloved music. It could be the top 40 pop song, or it could be like an old, kind of just well-known folk song. And we wanted to just elevate it so that it reached kind of a virtuosic intricacy that you'd find in a Beethoven string quartet or, you know, Haydn. But it was something that people were familiar with already. So it hooked them in, and then they can appreciate some of that intricacy. And so that's what we've been striving to do. A lot of string pop covers are used in wedding ceremonies or as background music at a party.
Sure.
And in those cases, the music's more kind of plain, sort of just a straight, we call it a transcription, just like directly
sure.
from what it was to and Atlas tries to take it a few more notches up from there, by reimagining harmonies or adding textures that aren't in the original, maybe having episodes of like a fantasy on the theme. And so that's what we hope to do. And for that reason, our music really is concert music. It's not background music. It's not the music you'd throw on, on the elevator. I mean, you
right.
could, but people would just be like, really, they wouldn't get off on the right floor.
It would be a bougie elevator.
Yeah, they'd just be stuck on the elevator listening. So, that's Atlas's story.
Well, and it's funny that you bring up Time for Three, because when I started working with Quad City Arts, they were the first
yes.
visiting
oh,
artist
they were.
That was
I remember
in
when they came to town, I was like, Time for Three is coming to the Quad Cities. How amazing for us.
Yeah, and they were awesome. And when I first started listening to you guys, I immediately thought of them.
Oh, my goodness. What a compliment. Thank you.
Well, you guys are absolutely terrific. Like I said, I spent a lot of yesterday just listening through your catalog and was entranced and just kind of taken away with the music. One thing I would love to talk to you about, I really love talking about like the business side of art and music. Obviously, you moved to Nashville, which is kind of the epicenter of the music world in a lot of ways. I am always curious when it comes to, you did these covers of Believer and Perfect that have gotten millions and millions of listens on Spotify. What is the process of, like, getting the rights and permissions to do that? And how does that work with, putting your own spin on the cover of that?
Yeah, that's something probably a lot of people don't even think about when creating content based on something that somebody else owns.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm always like, well, if I do it and they send me a cease and desist, I'll desist.
Exactly. Well,
but you're doing it at a higher level, so you need to go through the processes.
If you're making you just kind of singing for fun and you post a video on YouTube, you don't need to do anything about that. But when you do release something and you are bringing in an income from it,
right.
There's a whole legal process, and I think it's gotten a ton easier than it used to be because of these huge streaming platforms.
Sure.
That are. So what we do is we release our music through a distributor called DistroKid,
mm-hmm.
and they sort of take care of all of that. If you have to let them know what the original content is, and they, everything's all numbered in an index, so they know exactly what song we are covering. It's Believer by Imagine Dragons, and it's probably
sure.
owned by I don't even know. I'm actually not sure who's the label that owns that, but I don't
right.
need to know because
DistroKid takes care of it for you.
and so we do pay licensing fees mm-hmm. Monthly for the streams that we do, and we paid a fee up front, and we don't have our Believer cover on a CD yet, so we're not paying. We didn't have to pay for like a hard copy. We're just paying for the streaming.
Sure.
And I'm not even sure what it breaks down to, like as far as like a percentage. Because I don't have to, I'm not the one who is keeping those books. Like
right.
DistroKid is, we just get paid what we get paid. I think we pay like probably like $100 a month in licensing fees for like all of our music, which
sure.
it's not terrible.
Right.
It's not terrible.
Well, when you get 6 million listens, like
yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes.
I mean, and that's the reason why those songs have so many listens, is because it's familiar material.
Right.
So, like, you know, it's the trade-off.
Yeah, and you can use that to hook people into your sound. And then
exactly.
They say,
some more obscure things, original music. We have a few tracks up there that are original. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're not catching the attention as much as the covers. So we're not afraid of those fees.
Sure. Well, yeah. And you also did recently, I saw some music for a Zelda game.
Yes.
That's exciting. As a kid who grew up with like original Nintendo in the 90s.
Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Tell me about that album.
It's the great connector,
yeah.
Zelda. It's bringing together generations. Because like, for sure, I mean, my nephews that are age, well, now they're a bit older, but even when they were like 4 and 6, they all knew what Zelda was, and they recognized the music.
Right.
They don't even have a console yet. So I'm not sure how that's all happening. I personally didn't grow up playing any Zelda. I've never played the game. But one of the arrangers that is our, you know, favorite.
Yeah.
Guy, his name's Ari Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
We're performing a lot of music by Ari on November 10th. And I want to talk a little bit more about this big release we have coming up.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, Ari did grow up playing Zelda, and Zelda was like a haven for him,
sure.
As it is for a lot of adolescents and even adults. It's a comforting thing, and the music is phenomenal. The music, even in its kind of digital, like kind of all computerized form, as it was on original video games, is still so imaginative, rich, and dynamic. So Ari teamed up with another friend who they had met through online video game, you know, portals. They weren't even, you know, in the same town. They were across the world from each other, but they wanted to do a project that they called it reorchestrating Zelda. And that's to make this music that is sort of digitized with only like the computerized version of instruments.
Yeah.
They wanted to reimagine it with the real live instruments. And of course, hiring a string quartet is much more cost effective than hiring in a full orchestra. So they decided to kind of make it a string quartet centric endeavor that featured Atlas. And
that's awesome.
Yes, we have, I think there's like, 10 tracks on that whole album. And each one is incredible, delightful. We actually have plans to continue that project and release even another at least EP of more Zelda music. And they, Ari, the composer, does not hold back. I mean, he really pushes us. He writes in a very virtuosic manner.
Sure.
And so it's a big project always whenever Ari writes something for us. And this music's not for the faint of heart.
Well, one thing that was so impressive about that album is, you know, listening to your other things, whether the covers or the original work, and that had such a distinct feel to it from both the video game, and it, you know, it has almost this kind of like Irish sea sort of feel to it. Yeah, and it was just such a different format. And, you know, I think when you were talking earlier about reaching out to different audiences rather than just, I'm the classical music audience and I listen to NPR and here we are today on November 10th.
That's really, really,
you know, that's like my kids, because of the pandemic and the whole like Wellerman thing, like love sea shanties. You know, so we're in the car and we're listening to Sea Shanting. So I was listening to it and I was like, I could put this on and my kids would totally be able to connect with this.
Well, they would connect with it on, they'd probably connect on it just from the Zelda
level. And with Zelda, yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. So like, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about music, especially instrumental music where there isn't like a language that like, oh, well, I don't understand this language, so I don't really know what they're saying. Like, you don't have to understand any language. It can mean whatever it means to you. Mm-hmm. And there are so many, like, you know, the human experience and human emotion that is expressed. So yeah, absolutely. 100% agree.
Yeah. It's really a lovely project. And if you go to Spotify and check out Atlas and Sabrina, the album is called Fair Winds and Following Seas. And it's just, it's a delightful album. So I encourage everyone to listen.
We'll probably throw one or two tracks from that album on the concert on November 10th.
Sure. Well, you had mentioned earlier wanting to get back to that and the release.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yes. Okay. We have one of the biggest releases of our whole existence coming up, and officially it's a full concept album that's releasing on November 15th, but with our concert in the Quad Cities on the 10th, we're going to be kind of sneaking a release a little bit early to just our favorite audiences in the Quad Cities.
That's exciting.
And so the album is called The Sonnenberg Suite.
Mm-hmm.
It is in its entirety, it's 10 movements long. We will not play all 10 movements at the concert, but we will be featuring some of, you know, some of the real meat and of the work.
Sure.
Because we're going to make the concert more of a variety. Because this music written by Ari Fischer is all original music, and it's dedicated to this garden in upstate New York. It's a mansion with a you know, garden on its property, an estate.
Mm-hmm.
And the garden is incredible. It's called the Sonnenberg Mansion and Gardens. And the woman who kind of envisioned and created these gardens, she traveled the world after her husband passed away. And she was, you know, taken aback by the beauty of, you know, gardens around the world. We're talking Italy, England, Japan, you know.
I think I've seen a documentary on these gardens.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, they are spectacular. This place is now a New York State park, so you can visit it. It's called Sonnenberg Gardens, and it's in Canandaigua, New York, which is, you know, in the Finger Lakes area.
Sure.
of the state. And the gardens are separated into little themed sections, like a botanical garden, you know, that has a rock garden and Japanese garden and a pansy garden, a rose garden. So anyway, this complex has 10 segments. So there are 10 movements, and they are absolutely, you know, beautiful little gems on their own, but all together, this piece kind of takes you like a promenade through the gardens, almost like pictures at an exhibition, where it's like each movement takes you somewhere else. And I mean, it's based on a real place, unlike, you know, pictures of an exhibition is sort of fictitious, sort of not.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real place. There's a map of the gardens and you're walked through it. And there's a theme that kind of weaves its way through. That's the theme of the woman who created the gardens. And so anyway, it's a magical thing. The music also is very special. It is truly written as like an homage to the great composers of the Western classical music tradition.
Yeah.
You know, we don't like name composers that each movement's dedicated to, but there's a Haydn-esque movement. There's a Borodin-esque movement. There's a Dvorak-esque movement. There's Tchaikovsky. You know, it's and that was very important to the man who commissioned the work. Those were his favorite composers. And Ari Fischer is probably, would go out on a limb to say he might be the best composer out there right now to do something like this project. And he really, like, he honored the, what, you know, the commissioner wanted by, you know, really embracing the tradition, but still keeping it very fresh and making it his own.
Right.
And so if you, you know, you've now heard some of his arrangements because you've listened to the Zelda, you've listened to maybe he arranged our Diamonds track. Well,
that, you had a single release, The Old Fashioned Garden, I'm assuming that is from. Yeah, I listened to that as well. It's terrific.
Yes. That's our Haydn movement. It's a minuet and trio. And The Old Fashioned Garden is like an English country garden that is got hedges, kind of in sort of a maze, and there's a pergola. And so obviously, you know, the best case scenario would be that you get to go to the gardens, you get to see them, and then you get to hear the music. But you can kind of imagine yourself there just by listening to the music. And so, yes, we have this huge release coming out. We did a Kickstarter last summer for the project and raised over $45,000.
That's awesome.
To put it all together. We had it produced by an incredible, incredible Grammy Award winning producer who did the Time for Three albums. He's Joshua Bell's, he was Joshua Bell's guy. Unfortunately, he passed away just a week and a half ago.
Oh, no.
From cancer. And, you know, so that's even more of just like a heaviness to this. We recorded the album in August last year. And anyway, I mean, this man, his name's Adam Abe's House, was an absolute just titan of the industry. And we are so, so grateful that we had the opportunity to work with him. And you know, he was more than just an audio engineer. He was coaching us along the way and, you know, giving just the most, the exact feedback we needed at the time. And that's such a skill. And so, you know, his stamp is on this album. And we couldn't be prouder of it. We just are so, we're so over the moon about that this really came to be. It was an idea, as all these things kind of just spark. Like, we played a concert for the guy in the Finger Lakes. He saw it. He said, "I've got this idea. We need to do this piece that's about a place I love with all my heart, and it needs some music, you know, to really memorialize it."
Yeah.
And so we said, "Okay." And, you know, he'd been trying to get anybody who would listen interested in doing the project for 10 years or so. Go up to conductors at concerts. He'd go up to musicians he'd met. He himself was not a musician.
Sure.
He couldn't take the project further on his own. And so, you know, we were the first people that said, "Yeah, we'll do that. That sounds cool." And that's kind of the Atlas spirit. It's like, "Yeah, we'll do that." Like, why not? Like, we're so open to just trying whatever. And so this whole album came out of that, and we will be selling the hard CDs. We've got a kind of a basic version of a CD. It's just basically in a sleeve. Sure. Then we have a deluxe version that has this gorgeous booklet inside where you can read more about every movement. You can read more about the backstory. You see a picture of the map. And then there's going to also be a vinyl.
I'm a sucker for a vinyl.
Yes. So there's a vinyl, and we've got lots of other cool, little kind of merch items around that are centered around Sonnenberg Suite. And so we'll have all those things with us at our concert, and it will also go up on Spotify on November 15th, the full album. There will be one more track released before November 15th.
Oh, cool.
And then it'll be the rest of the 10. And so then it will be available for everyone to listen. It's on Spotify. It's on all the streaming platforms, Amazon, Apple, also YouTube. So it's really out there for anyone who wants to listen.
Yeah, you guys have a great YouTube presence.
Thank you.
Like, I know, as an artist, like, there's so many social media channels yes. now that you have to pay attention to. And it's like a full-time job in and of itself.
It truly
to,
is.
To be creating that content.
I know. You think being an artist is about practicing your music and getting on stage to perform. But honestly, for Atlas, since we're self-managed, that's the practicing and getting on stage to perform is probably like 20% of what we do. Right. And we do a lot of that. So you can imagine the 80% of what else we do is it's a daily endeavor.
Yeah.
Hours and hours every day.
Yep. Yeah. It's, you know, and that's one thing, again, that always interests me is just that business side of the arts and how, you know, that when you're in music school or like theater school, in my case, like you don't learn about that hustle as much. Yeah. Like you maybe learn a little bit, but then it's just kind of go out there and
yes. Well, and honestly,
figure it out.
You can't even really learn about it in school because it literally changes every 2 months.
Yeah.
The paradigm shifts.
Yep.
And so, I mean, you couldn't have a class about it in school. You just have to go out there and figure it out and experiment and learn from what else other people are doing that has been successful. You know, someone's setting a trend and if you don't even know who the next trendsetter is going to be. Someone's setting a trend and you can kind of see if it aligns with you. You can't do every trend as an artist. Not everything is really relevant to you.
No.
But yeah, I mean, we spend so much time sort of researching and we've even, you know, we work with some coaches, you know, on a kind of, you know, one-off coachings every once in a while where we learn. We've got a video editor on retainer.
He
doesn't do all of our editing, but he does a decent amount of it, especially the like higher production, you know, projects. But he is a social media guru.
Right.
He himself has a band that's like killing it on Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah.
And so he tells us what his band is doing. He's in like a emo kind of punk group. It's really a different genre from us.
Yeah.
So, you know, he does some things that are like this follows like their own quirkiness. So it doesn't always relate to like what we want to do.
Sure.
But any of his ideas are just you got to think in a completely different way. And especially classical music we're so tunnel visioned and we like literally spend, you know, countless hours alone in a practice room, like just cut off from what the rest of the world is doing and how the rest of the world is living their lives. So you just have to think about it in a new way. And you have to realize that these platforms are for the people, they're for the consumer. So you've got to make your content for them, not just what you think is great. So it's just it's been quite an exercise and it can be, it's a very seldomly rewarding, but when it is, it's great.
Yeah.
You just do a lot of throwing spaghetti at a wall and, you know, it's, but when things do kind of click, that's really, really fun. And I believe with all my heart that, you know, it's all about the daily pursuit. You can't just say, okay, I've got one good idea. I'm going to do that one good idea. Then I'll take a break and then I'll do another good idea. Like the good ideas come from the constant trial.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're doing a lot of that and we for sure experience lots of flops on social media. We think it's a great idea. Nobody else cares. Then all of a sudden one post will get 100,000 likes. We'll get, you know, a million streams.
Right.
And it's like, what was even so special about that? I don't know.
Right. How is that any different than the one before?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, seriously, I don't know, but nobody knows. And as long as we're posting stuff that we think is cool and is true to us, then we can't go wrong. If other people aren't picking up on it, that's just part of the process. It's not because it wasn't good. And this, yeah, the same thing for our music that's up on Spotify. Some of them really take off and others not as much. It's all our quality. We only release things that are highest quality and sometimes they land more than others. But that's just part of it. And, you know, being self-managed, as I said, like we just have to keep doing it. And that's how we've gotten where we are, is just from continuing to set a higher bar and do projects that we think are worthy. And, you know, the rest of it is a little bit out of our hands.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we put resources into targeted ads. We, put resources into marketing. But in the end, it's kind of just, you just have to have some faith and you have to believe in what you're doing, and other people will find it and they will love it if you really love it. So, you know, we'll pep talk for myself.
Well, no,
or anyone else who's listening,
you know, and it's not that like the music business now is harder than it was 40 years ago. Like any arts businesses are hard and they are very competitive. Yes. And you have to be on your game. But the market right now is so much more disjointed when it comes to content, whether it's music or film or television or whatever. You know, there's more, you know, it's not, there's three channels on television and you're going to like the show or not.
Oh my gosh, I know. How does anyone even find anything? It's wild, really.
Yeah, but it's, you know, a good friend of mine who is a filmmaker, kind of like in the indie film world. And, you know, he said, because I had asked him once, because we were both in the film and television industry, and I was like, you know, kind of asking him just about his process and what he decides to create. And he was like, you know, I kind of tried the Hollywood game of like making the things they want. And he's like, at the end of the day, I just decided to make the movies that I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
And they have found an audience for him. And so I know for myself as a theater artist now, I'm like, okay, now I'm just going to make the shows that I want to make.
Exactly. And and your whole heart is in it.
Yeah.
And when your whole heart is in it and other people do get the chance to find it, it really speaks to them. There's something about the genuineness. I mean, if you're doing a project that you think other people will like, but you don't even necessarily love it, that comes through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So as you have gone away from our Quad City area, I always ask this to anyone who is not from here but has been here or is moving or anything like that. What is the thing you miss most about the Quad Cities?
I do miss living there. I get to go back so often that you know, I don't have to miss it for too long, but I just was really overwhelmed by the community.
Mm-hmm.
And especially being a part of the Quad City Symphony family, there's just like an amazing group of people around that organization in and around. And, you know, the symphony has like a volunteers organization of just the most amazing human beings.
Yeah, and their volunteer organization is.
Yeah, it's above and beyond. It is above and beyond. You know, just this kind of, even though the population of all the Quad Cities combined isn't small, it has a smaller town feel where you could just see people you know at Walmart or Costco and kind of, you know, the other things I loved were just that everything's like 10 minutes away. There's never any traffic. You don't pay for parking. You know, those things that are just a fantasy in a bigger city.
Right. And that we take for granted.
Yeah. I remember. I moved when the bridge was under construction.
Sure.
And people were like, traffic, you know, that's really going to cause traffic. And it's like, it just added maybe like 3 to 4 minutes to just like go to the Centennial Bridge or like to just, you know, drive. Like, it's like, that's okay. Like rush hour traffic adds like 3 minutes to your drive. That was going to be 8 minutes. Now it's 11 minutes. Like,
oh no,
I can live with that. Yeah. But no, I loved the community. And I mean, I get to come back and see all these faces and get to chat with people. I love the Quad City Symphony. I love playing in that orchestra. So I don't have to miss it because I still do it. But that was one of my favorite things about living in the cities as well.
Yeah, well, we are glad you are still coming back here. I'm so excited for the concert on the 10th. And for you to play in that space. It's a space we don't have a lot of spaces that size. So it's been really nice to see Sound Conservatory open up that venue.
Yeah.
To be able to support artists like that. So one last question, and this is just my I don't know everything question. Okay. Violin 1 versus violin 2.
In a quartet or in general?
In general. What's the difference?
It's like soprano and alto in a choir. It's just a different voice. The composer's wanting to write a four-part something, so we need to have...
Is it different tuning or just kind of they were written as different parts?
Just, you know, it's same tuning for the violins. It's just usually the first violin is the higher register, just like a soprano, things higher. And because it's in the higher register, it's often the melody.
Sure.
And a second violin part is maybe more like rhythmic or like harmonies for sure.
Are the violin two harmonies as ridiculous as alto harmonies where like you hear them and you're like, how do you even make sense of that?
They can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be. For sure. There's lots of kind of jokes or, you know, idioms about second violin, like playing second fiddle and like, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But it's just another voice in the texture, and it's indispensable. I mean, either part, you can't live without it. So, when you're growing up and you're learning your instrument and there are varying levels of ability, you'll put the more advanced players on the first violin part because it maybe goes up higher on the instrument and not everybody knows how to do that yet.
Sure.
But once you're a professional, there's really no difference in who plays first and who plays second as far as ability. And there's plenty of pieces I can think of where the second violin part is more difficult than the first violin part. In Atlas, actually, we don't consider ourselves a first violinist and a second violinist in the group. We are just two violinists of a group. There's two violins, there's one viola, there's one cello. And we actually orient ourselves on the stage with the two violins on the outside. That's actually how the Quad City Symphony sits as well, with the first violins on stage, is that stage right? And second violins on stage left.
Okay.
And so we have our two violins on the outside of Atlas because our parts, you want the melody voice on the outside, kind of as a leading figure that everyone can easily see. And so in Atlas, our music is written, since it's all music that was arranged in this recent years, nothing older than like 8 years old, as old as we are. The music is written so that the violin parts are just very equal. Like we share the role of melody. It passes around, and it also passes around to the viola and the cello as well, like very, very seamlessly and equally amongst the group. So there isn't a first violin in our group. And just, you know, whenever we play music, we switch on and off who plays the part called first violin. We're both first violin. And even within any piece that we have, that was all of our music was written for us. You know, the composers know that this is a equal group and they pass the melody around. You will notice that at the concert. That, you know, there's no one person who's like the lead singer or, you know, whatever.
Right. Well, that is Good to know. I've always been curious. But thank you so much for joining me today, Sabrina. It's been wonderful talking to you.
I had a great time talking with you.
Yeah, we can't wait for the concert on the 10th and to see you with QCSO throughout the year. So best of luck in Nashville and with the release and all of that. Thanks for being my guest again on Talking Art. Thanks again to Quad City Bank and Trust for supporting Talking Art. And a reminder to listen to Atlas and Sabrina. You can follow her and them on Spotify and YouTube. And remember that it's spelled A-T-L-Y-S. Or check out their website, atlasmusic.com. And for tickets to their concert on November 10th at 7 p.m. at Sound Conservatory, go to the Sound Conservatory website, www.soundconservatory.com, and click on the Concert Series tab. Once again, thanks to Quad City Bank and Trust for getting Sabrina and I talking art. And thank you so much, Sabrina. Can't wait to hear you.
Thank you so much. Can't wait to be there.